Listener, if you've been here for a while, you know that from time to time, I'll release a free black label to the feed as a promotional tactic to promote the Patreon. But I want to give you a heads up on this episode. This particular episode is very dark. It has very extreme content. You should know that going in. With that said, if you do enjoy the episode, considering heading to patreon.com/obscurecrimepodcast. There's almost 10 years worth of content. It's frankly an absurd amount, and it costs less than a gallon of gas. All right, let's get on with it. Listener, I'm sure you've heard about the station nightclub fire before, but I want you to hold on tight because there's been some recent developments that make this a new case. There's something called the Pickett tape, or the Matthew Pickett tape, and it's a significant piece of evidence because a recorder was found with his body, and it remained fully functional. He was an avid goer to concerts in the area, and he would record bootlegs of various concerts. When Matthew Pickett succumbed to the fire, this recorder stayed underneath him. Now, very recently, as in very, very recently, this tape was released, and the audio is much, much clearer. Now, despite that, it hasn't really made the rounds as far as true crime goes. I think part of it is that the audio is very, very disturbing. I'm going to play about 7 minutes of it later on in the episode, and you should know it is very tough to get through. In coverage of this case that you'll find on the internet, typically speaking, it will be this one videotape that has circulated for ages, in which somebody records from the outside of the building. What makes this tape different is this was recorded from within. Now, with that explained, let's get to Black Label.
I've always said, being a firefighter was the greatest job in the world. It's just sometimes you wish you weren't working. My issues and my evils from that night are my own. Somehow, for me, it was very quiet. We were relegated to taking our stretcher and going and standing at the front door of the station nightclub and waiting. And waiting for the next victim.
Rhode Island in the early 2000s was a quiet corner of New England where life moved at a slower pace than your average big city. Factories that once hummed with textile work had long since gone silent. Small towns dotted the landscape, and on a cold winter night in February 2003, most people stayed indoors unless something special pulled them out. For the rock and roll faithful in West Warwick and the surrounding communities, that something special was a Thursday night concert at a little venue called The Station.
Our stretcher and ourselves, myself and my partner, were standing there watching the firefighters working not 10 feet from us. And they were pulling bodies up with ropes. They were reaching in, lassoing them, and just pulling. And as bodies would come out, they would, they had trouble trying to get them to the area that was marked as the morgue, temporary morgue, which was nothing more than a tarp laid on the ground. And the stretcher was in such a way that as they dragged them over the hood of one car, they would use the stretcher for the bridge to get them over to the hood of the other car, to get them over to drag them over to the morgue area. The rule is pulseless and breathless in a mass casualty are not viable. And the hardest part for me at that point was standing there waiting for a, quote, viable victim and watching all of these individuals laying on a top. And they didn't look that bad. As you looked over that night and being in the winter and the bodies were on the ground and they were steaming and you would look and you'd say, is that a breath? And you were hoping and you knew you couldn't go over there. You knew you had to stand right there and do what you had to do. You had to wait for someone to come out with a pulse and a breath. And that wasn't happening until Linda came up. And the young guy just stopped in this look in his eyes and he said, it moved. And I looked and I said back, no, it didn't. And it was the first time I had referred to anyone as an it. But you couldn't tell. You know, you could see it was obviously a person, but the injuries were such that you couldn't decipher male from female. And then they were arguing that it hadn't moved. And then she just reared her head and made this sound, trying to tell us that, you know, that she was alive. And I was like, oh God. So we got her in the truck, and I remember David saying to me from the front, we're not getting out of here. We were blocked in. Her injuries were primarily head. Her left arm was burnt. Pretty much her hand was gone. Her ears were not noticeable. She had no hair left. To my disbelief and amazement, when we were cutting her clothes, she reached behind her and tried to cover herself. Which meant to me, which told me that she knew exactly what was going on. And the fact that she could know what was going on and know that she was holding my hand was I couldn't comprehend, because I couldn't imagine, and I hate to say this, but I couldn't imagine the brain surviving that kind of heat in the skull. Just that alone. Never, let alone what she inhaled, let alone, you know, the amount of burns she had.
The club sat in a squat, single-story wood frame building with a footprint of 412 square meters. It started life back in 1946 as a simple gin mill, before cycling through life as a restaurant, a pub, and finally a rock venue in 1991. The place was nothing fancy. Low ceilings, exposed beams, and a main room that could hold a few hundred people on a busy night. But it was a home for local bands and touring acts who wanted an intimate spot to play. The sound was loud, the beer was cold, and for one night, the crowd could forget the grind of everyday life.
So my ride was where I sat on the floor, because her head was down, and I knew she couldn't see me, but I just wanted somehow for her to know that I was close. And sat on the floor, and like I said, I was injecting her with one hand, I was holding her hand with my other. And then I was praying. I was praying that someone wasn't going to make it. I remember that feeling of just looking at the totality of this young woman's injuries and the fact that modern medicine is where it's at. The potential of her surviving this was greater than I had wanted it to be. And I know that sounds terrible, but she needed to be comfortable. We needed to be there. You know, she needed to be out of there 10 or 15 minutes sooner. Or we needed to be there 5 minutes later. And I'd never prayed like that before. And it's a hard thing to swallow. Even to this day, to imagine dedicating my career to helping people and praying sitting on the floor praying that someone would go. It's not something that you usually do.
We
My faith has wandered. I have a hard time now thinking of God in heaven.
Brothers Michael and Jeffrey bought the club in March 2000. Michael handled the day-to-day operations while Jeffrey kept his day job as a reporter for a local television station. They wanted to make the place viable, so they tackled the biggest complaint from neighbors: noise. In the months leading up to the fire, they lined the walls and ceiling around the stage with polyurethane, a foam ordered from American Foam Corporation. It was the kind of cheap stuff meant for packing crates, not the flame retardant version required for public spaces. The foam was never tested for fire safety. The building itself had no sprinkler system. Rhode Island building codes grandfathered older structures like this one in because they predated 1976 requirements. The main entrance funneled into a narrow hallway, barely wide enough for two people to pass shoulder to shoulder. The licensed capacity was 404, but that number meant nothing on a night when the house was packed. The building sat on a lot, set back 42 meters. There was no direct street access from the west or south. Parking for over 100 cars filled the front and west side. A small basement sat under the main bar room. The north-facing front door led into a short vestibule, with double doors outside and a single door inside. Windows lined the north side in the main bar area. In the sunroom, a platform sat on the west end, with a drummer's a clove recessed in the corner. A dressing room tucked into the northwest corner. The main bar formed a horseshoe shape on the left. The kitchen separated the bar from a smaller dart room and back bar. Restrooms, office, and storage filled the rear. Three emergency exits existed: the front main entrance, the platform side door, and the main bar side door. A fourth kitchen door stayed off limits to patrons. The show that evening was billed as a throwback to the glory days of hair metal. Local openers Trip and Fathead warmed up the crowd, followed by WHJY DJ Dr. Metal. He hyped the room with his signature growl and kept the energy high. Then at 11:07 p.m., the headliners took the stage. Jack Russell's Great White, an offshoot of the 80s glam band Great White, lead singer Jack Russell, guitarist Mark Kendall, bassist David Phyllis, drummer Eric Powers, and guitarist Ty Longley, launched into their first song, Desert Moon. The house lights dropped, the crowd pressed forward, beers in hand, singing along to the familiar riffs. 450 people filled the space, shoulder to shoulder, some standing, some sitting at tables. Bodies packed tight enough that movement felt restricted, even before the panic hit. Tour manager Daniel Bichel stepped forward with four pyrotechnic gerbs. These were cylindrical canisters, designed to shoot controlled sprays of sparks 15 feet high for about 15 seconds, two angled at 45 degrees, two straight up. He had used them dozens of times before on this tour. The club owner had given verbal permission earlier that day. Michelle lit them from the side of the stage near a dressing room. Sparks flew in a brilliant white cascade. Some landed directly on the foam behind the drummer's a clove. 9 seconds after ignition, flames appeared on the wall above the stage. The crowd cheered at first. They thought it was part of the act. We'll be right back. 19 seconds in, the flames climbed higher. Band members started glancing back. 25 seconds, the fire reached the ceiling. 35 seconds, the band killed the music. Jack Russell leaned into the microphone and said calmly, "Wow, that's not good."
Wow. That's not good.
Get the fuck out of here!
40 seconds after the Gerbs fired, the band walked off stage. The club's fire alarm finally sounded, strobes flashing, but it was not wired to the fire department. It did nothing to
Listener, I've been thinking a lot lately about how old school banks have been nickel and diming us for years with overdraft fees, monthly fees, and all that nonsense. That's why I'm so excited to tell you about Chime. It's changing the way people bank with fee-free, smarter banking that actually is built for you, not the 1%. Chime isn't like those traditional banks. With MyPay, you can get access to up to $500 of your paycheck anytime and get paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit. No overdraft fees, no minimum balance fees, no monthly fees, none of that. You can even build credit history stress-free, earn up to 3% APY on your savings. That's 7 times higher than a traditional bank. And their customer service is rated 5 stars by USA Today, with real humans available 24/7. And now, there's the new Chime card, the cashback card that actually helps you build credit with your own money. No annual fees, no interest. And when you have qualifying direct deposit, you get 1.5% cash back on eligible purchases. It's like cash back and credit building finally working together. I switched in just a few minutes, and it was seriously the easiest upgrade I've made. I've never felt more in control of my paycheck. Chime is not just smarter banking. It is the most rewarding way to bank. Join the millions who are already banking fee-free today. It just takes a few minutes to sign up. Head to chime.com/obscura. That is chime.com/obscura.
Chime is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services, a secured Chime Visa credit card, and MyPay line of credit provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. MyPay eligibility requirements apply, and credit limit ranges $20 to $500. Optional services and products may have fees or charges. See chime.com/fees info. Advertised annual percentage yield with Chime Plus status only. Otherwise, 1.00% APY applies. No min balance required. Chime card on-time payment history may have a positive impact on your credit score. Results may vary. See chime.com for details and applicable terms.
Listener, after diving deep into another true crime story, I've been loving a little wind-down ritual at the end of the night, and that's exactly why I'm obsessed with Mood. Mood is the online spot for federally legal, hemp-derived cannabis grown on small, pesticide-free family farms right here in the U.S. They ship gummies, flower, edibles, pre-rolls, and more discreetly, straight to your door. No lines, no hassle. They've got something for every vibe. Chill for sleep, focused for deep work, happy and euphoric when you just want to feel good, or even that extra spark for better sex. My go-to lately, their Sleepy Time Advanced Gummies. Super smooth, mind-soothing calm that kicks in fast and leaves me waking up clear. No grogginess. Perfect after a long day. And right now, first-time buyers get 20% off your entire order when you use my code OBSCURA at checkout. Head to mood.com, find the gummy, flower, or edible that matches your perfect mood, and save 20% off with code OBSCURA. Everything's backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. Go to mood.com/obscura and try it today.
Alert responders.
Yo, Joe, take a picture.
One minute after ignition, thick black smoke poured down from the ceiling like a waterfall of ink. The polyurethane foam burned fast and dirty, releasing hydrogen cyanide carbon monoxide and superheated gases. Visibility dropped to zero in seconds. Temperatures inside the main room spiked past 1,000 degrees Celsius near the floor within 90 seconds. People started coughing, gagging, eyes streaming. Panic exploded.
Oh my God!
stampede began towards the only exit most people knew from the front door. Up to two-thirds of the crowd funneled into that narrow hallway. People tripped over each other in the dark. Those behind kept pushing forward, blind with terror. Bodies piled up four and five deep. The first 90 or so made it out. Everyone after that hit a wall of flesh. Survivors later described the crush as a living nightmare. Ribs cracked under boots, faces pressed into the carpet until noses broke and teeth shattered. People clawed at backs and hair and clothes, trying to climb over the growing mound of the fallen. Smoke rolled out over their heads in a black cloud while flames licked at the doorframe. Some victims were already unconscious from the toxic gas before the weight of the pile finished them by compression via asphyxia. Lungs burned from the inside as superheated air scorched throats and windpipes. Skin blistered and peeled in sheets. Hair ignited like dry tinder. A few dozen broke windows along the front and side. Shattered glass sliced arms and legs as people shoved friends through the opening. Blood mixed with melting plastic dripping from the ceiling. 20 people escaped through the stage door after bouncers finally gave way. 12 slipped out an employee exit. But inside the main room, conditions turned unsurvivable almost instantly. On the dance floor in the sunroom and near the bar, people collapsed where they stood. The foam melted and dripped burning plastic onto the heads and shoulders, fusing flesh to the floor in grotesque puddles. Some victims were found fused to each other from the heat. Their bodies melted together in a final desperate embrace. Others lay curled in fetal positions, skin cracked and blackened like overcooked meat. Hair burned away in patches, leaving raw scalp exposed. Eyes swelled shut from the heat, lips split and bled. The air itself felt like fire in the lungs, turning every breath into a scream that never left the throat.
Oh,
First 911 calls came in within 60 seconds of ignition. West Warwick fire engines rolled at 11:10 p.m. Engine 4 arrived at 11:13 p.m. and stretched a hose line. By then, the building was fully involved. Flames shot from every window and door. Firefighters found a mountain of bodies blocking the front entrance. They pulled people out by the arms and legs, some already charred beyond recognition. Others still twitching as the last oxygen left their blood. Skin hung in blackened strips. Faces were swollen and unrecognizable. One firefighter later recalled grabbing a hand that came off in his glove, like overcooked meat sliding from the bone. Another dragged a woman free, only to realize her lower body had fused to the carpet in a puddle of melted foam. The smell of burnt plastic and roasted flesh clung to their gear for weeks, no matter how many times they washed it. A triage center sprang up across the street. Ambulances from Warwick, Coventry, and Cranston poured in. Kent Hospital filled to capacity. Doctors and nurses worked through the night, treating third-degree burns covering entire bodies. Lungs filled with soot and cyanide. Some patients arrived with eyes melted shut and covered in melted plastic. Others had limbs so crushed from the stampede that bones protruded through skin. The smell of burnt hair and roasted flesh hung in the air for days. Paramedics triaged on the spot, deciding who could wait and who needed immediate transport and who was beyond saving, even if they were still in the process of dying. Bodies lay in rows on the frozen ground, some still warm, some already stiff. One young man pulled from the pile had his face pressed so hard into another victim's back that the imprint of clothing remained seared to his cheek. A woman found near the bar had her arms locked around a friend in a death grip, both bodies fused at the shoulders from the dripping foam. The roof over the main bar collapsed at 11:57 p.m. A second collapse in the sunroom followed at 12:07 a.m. By 1:30 a.m., the last survivors and bodies had been cleared. 96 people died at the scene. Four more succumbed in hospitals in the days and weeks afterward. Among the dead were guitarist Ty Longley, DJ Michael Gonzalez, and three members of Fathead, plus one of their wives. 230 others survived with injuries ranging from third-degree burns covering entire bodies to permanent lung damage and crushing trauma that left some unable to walk again. Nicholas O'Neill, just 18, came with friends to see the band, never made it home. His parents, Dave Kane and Joanne O'Neill, would later become voices for forgiveness in the face of unimaginable loss. Abby Hosington, 28, died in the crush. Her father, Leland, later spoke publicly about the pain of losing his daughter to a night that should have been fun. Factory workers off duty, police officers, college students, and parents, out for a rare night without the kids, all perished together. The fire held no prejudice. One survivor named Brian, who was trapped near the stage, described watching the fire race across the ceiling like a living thing. He said the heat was so intense, it felt like his eyeballs were boiling in their sockets. Another survivor, John, recalled crawling over bodies in the hallway, his hands sinking into soft, charred flesh that gave and tear with each press as he fought for air. A woman who escaped through a broken window had glass embedded so deep in her arms that doctors removed shards for weeks afterward. Her friend did not make it out. The friend's body was found pressed against the window frame, half in and half out. Skin melted to the sill. Tour manager Daniel Bichelle, the 32-year-old road veteran who lit the gerbs, had worked with Great White for years, He later told police he believed the pyrotechnics were safe and that the club owners had approved them. He carried the weight of 100 deaths on his shoulder for the rest of his life. The Derderian brothers, Michael and Jeffrey, faced their own reckoning. Michael, the hands-on owner, had personally overseen the installation of the deadly foam. Jeffrey, the reporter-turned-club owner, had filmed parts of the show that night, with a camera crew hoping to capture footage for a news segment. Both men insisted they had no idea the foam was so flammable. The fire spread with merciless speed because every factor lined up perfectly against survival. No sprinklers, wrong foam, overcrowding, a single viable exit for most. The polyurethane foam ignited in seconds and raced across the ceiling at speeds that left no time for escape, flames shooting across the surface generating thick black smoke that dropped like a curtain. People who tried to hide in the bathrooms or behind the bar, they were suffocated in minutes. Everything that could go wrong did. Daniel Bichelle pleaded guilty to 100 counts of involuntary manslaughter in 2006. The judge sentenced him to 4 years in prison. He served just under two before being released in 2008. Families of the victims packed in the courtroom to meet in the middle, I guess. Some calling for mercy, others demanding further justice. Bichelle broke down in tears during his statement, telling the court, quote, "I live with this every day." The Derderian brothers were also charged with triple-digit counts of involuntary manslaughter as well. Michael, who installed the foam, pled no contest and received 4 years in prison. Jeffrey, who was at the club that night and would film the show, received 3 years probation and 500 hours of community service. Both men maintained that they had no knowledge of the foam's dangers and blamed the fire inspector who had visited the club multiple times without flagging the issue. The fire marshal was never charged. Rhode Island law granted him immunity for actions taken in good faith. Civil lawsuits followed. Families of the dead and injured sued the club owners, Great White, the foam manufacturer, even the town of West Warwick. Settlements reached into the millions, but for many, it was never about the money. It was about accountability. One mother whose son died in the hallway crush told reporters, quote, "I don't want their money. I want them to feel what we feel every single day." That single night changed fire codes across the country and around the world. The station site itself became a memorial park. A quiet field of grass and stones where families still gather every February to remember the 100 lives lost. Candles flicker, names are read aloud. Survivors brace each other, their scars both visible and invisible. A permanent reminder of the night that the music stopped. Great White continued to tour, but the band members who survived carried the guilt and the grief. Jack Russell later said in interviews that the fire changed him forever. Ty Longley's guitar still sits in a case untouched, a silent tribute to the young musician who never made it off stage. Survivors like the one who crawled through the broken windows and glass embedded into their arms spoke of nightmares that never fully faded. A father who escaped through the stage door lost his wife and daughter in the crush. He described the sound of bones snapping under the weight of the crowd as something that replayed in his head every day and every night. One woman recalls running out of the doors, turning back, and seeing her friends sucked back into the crowd. 23 years later, the station nightclub fire remains one of the deadliest in American history, surpassed only by a handful of other nightclub disasters. Listener, if you ever find yourself in a nightclub, check the exits, check for sprinklers, because in 6 minutes, one spark can turn a party into a mass grave.
free audio post-production. By Alphonic.com.
From lashes for days with the Viral Liquid Lash Extensions Mascara to awakening your eyes with lift and color from the Brilliant Eye Brightener, Thrive Cosmetics is the go-to when you want to amplify your everyday look. Plus, every product is 100% vegan, cruelty-free, and made with clean, skin-loving ingredients that work with your skin. And for every product purchased, Thrive Cosmetics donates to help communities thrive. So every time you use your favorite Thrive Cosmetics product, you're helping communities you care about, too. Amplify your everyday. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/shine26 for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/shine26.